got home from that thing, and 20 days later, we hosted a race. We couldn't contain ourselves. We couldn't wait any longer. We just hosted a race and talked every friend we had into coming out and doing this.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I'm Chip.
And I'm Chris. And welcome to Lucky Episode 13.
Oh.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Exciting. On this week's episode, we have the one and only Andy Hewitt, who we consider the godfather of swim run. I guess him and Sean Durkin. Maybe Andy Hewitt's the godfather and Sean Durkin is like the consigliere. They put on the first swim run event in the United States. So it's pretty exciting to have Andy on. He's been a big fan of us. For folks that don't know, we have a Patreon account and he actually became our first patron on Patreon. So spoiler alert, if you sponsor us on Patreon, you might get on the show.
You can buy our love. You can buy the Low Tide Boys love. Speaking of buying things, we are still running our fundraiser with the Wild Swim Run. With the women from Wild Swim Run. Proceeds from the shirts go to the Wild Youth Initiative, which is a initiative by the Wild Swim Run women that focus on getting girls and women into the sport of swim run. As those are still up, link in bio, as they say on Instagram. And it's also, if you just go to our website, we have a big banner up top that just tells you to click that. And I believe potentially as of this being recorded, the site that we host these on is running a sale. So 10% off, we put the link out on our Instagram account. So I think it's stay inside is the code to save 10%.
Yeah, something like stay inside and give us your money. So another update from the ladies at Wild Swim Run, Fia and Manny reached out to us and let us know that someone actually reached out to them about participating and they learned about the clinics from our show. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And that's kind of the whole point of like the reason why that we try to have so many different people on, especially people that are having and moving the sport of swim run forward in like such a great way. So even if it just happened to one person, like our work here is done, you know, it just makes me so happy and thrilled that that's kind of, that happens.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
As everybody knows, COVID-19 still has everyone in California on a shelter in place, which means we can't really go outside except for essentials, which includes, you know, going for a run, but you can't really go to state parks and things like that. So the Low Tide Boys, I know Chris, I saw him on the trainer. I hopped on the Peloton as well, and I got a couple runs in the last couple of days. So I feel like we're going to sound like a broken record here. So we'll probably won't be touching on the workout updates because, you know, they're probably just as boring or unimaginative as some. But one thing that we did get, and this ties in really well to our shout out, I ordered the paddle stretch cords. They're called Easy Stretch Cords, and we'll put the link in the show notes there. So I got Chris and I a pair to do some dry.
Yeah, thank you for those, Chipper. Mighty kind of you.
It was a quarantine gift, a quarantine low tide boys gift. So that brings us right into the shout out. We posted on our Instagram and said, hey, we got these things. How the hell do you use them? Because we had no idea about workouts or anything like that. And Chris, why don't you give the shout out?
Yeah, it was actually, you know, when you're interacting with us on the Instagram page, you never know who you're actually getting sort of replying to you. We kind of do that on purpose because we think it's funny. But I was chatting with Drew Sapp, who's the co-owner of Drew Racing and Rehab. And when we put one, I think Chipper, you're the one who posted it up, like, how do we use these things? He reached out right away. He has a pretty cool business and he just sent us a bunch of workouts. And that kind of got us thinking, which, you know, if you have little kids, you know what comes next is a dangerous pastime. I know. No, is that funny?
Daniel Tiger?
No, man, Beating the Beast, yo. Gaston? No.
Wow, that's a deep cut. How did you?
Is it deep cut? I don't know, man. I feel like I'm watching that movie every, you know, it's 78 hours or something. On the repeat. Anyway, so I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool if we just put the call out? We're putting it on the show that anybody who has any interesting, random, bizarre, unique dry land workouts, send them over and we're going to host them on our site. So Drew, I was going to reach out for permission in a post, but screw it. I'll just ask you live on the air if it's cool for us to share the workouts you gave. Obviously, we'll give everyone credit, but you know, a little bit of foreshadowing. I'm also going to reach out to Nicholas Ramirez from Team Omble for some workouts. He's our guest now next week's show, so make sure you're subscribing to listen to that. But yeah, the call's out there. Anybody who has the funkier the better dry land workouts that they want to share, send them to us. You can email us at lowtideboys@gmail.com or reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, whatever, and we'll get that up on our site. We think that'll be pretty funny. I'm curious to see what people are going to come up with.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And if you could just kind of keep it top of mind too, like we'll keep this in the theme of, you know, getting into to swim run. Let's try to keep the workouts to like stuff that you don't need to order something online or go to the store. Like I saw Fanny did something where she had her backpack and she just put a bunch of books and some of her equipment in and kind of used that as like a makeshift, probably a 20-pound little weight that she did some squats and overhead stuff with. So let's keep it in that sort of DIY fashion that, oh, you don't need to go buy these $50 stretch cords. You can if you want. And we did, but it's not necessary to get the work done.
Yeah, I think pandemic specific. So if you only got rolls of toilet paper, which in America, that seems to be the most important thing you could have, you know, use that. But speaking of what we've been doing in terms of training, before we get to our guest, we thought we would do a little pop culture segment about the Netflix series Tiger King, which if you've been following our meme page, we're starting to post some stuff because Chipper and I saw it and we think it's totally ridiculous, but they're not really getting the likes. So we thought it'd be a public service announcement for our own egos on our Instagram page, because we just live and die by the likes, people, to just talk about that show a little bit if you haven't heard of it.
Yeah, so I guess, and this won't be a reoccurring theme. I mean, it's not planned for us, but I guess if everyone likes it, we can make it a reoccurring theme. But what are the Low Tide Boys watching segment? We'll add some cool music. Yeah, it's about this guy who owns a big cat. And when I say big cat, I mean like a tiger, lions, ligers park where he has over like close to 300 of these big cats and kittens. Are they called cubs? And you can come and take a picture with the cats and feed them and just watch them in their, you know, giant, you know, fenced cages and stuff. But I mean, the owner is, his name is Joe Exotic, and there's no better way to put it, but he's a character. He's a character.
Yeah, he's a character. So basically this show's about the way that the journalist or documentarian got into it was he was chasing down a story about people keeping wild exotic animals, and he just stumbled upon this guy who had a snow leopard in the back of a minivan in Florida, and that opened this whole world of just like kind of crazy people that own these huge cats. And it was interesting because I mean, that you honestly can't make this shit up. Like the story is so crazy that I just don't think anyone has the imagination capable of putting these characters together in the way that it happened. So I think, I mean, I don't really like these types of shows, but for me, it was just like, I can't believe that people, that these kind of people actually exist. So yeah, definitely recommend people check out the show. Joe Exotic is very memeable. So there'll be a lot of memes coming down. So, you know, if that gives you some context for our jokes on this stuff, we encourage you to watch it. It's a great way to, you know, waste 7 hours of your quarantine shelter in place time.
And once, if you have seen it some of the memes might have went over your head, you will understand. So just scroll back a little in the feed and you'll like hopefully be, as the kids are saying, raffle, roll on the floor laughing.
Yes, exactly. So well, with that,
oh yes,
why don't we just transition to this week's guest, which as we mentioned at the beginning of the show is Andy Hewitt. He's the founder of California Swim Run. He hosted the first swim run event in the United States after doing Atala World Championship way back when. And it's a really interesting show. And yeah, hope you like it.
You will. You'll like it.
So with us today, we Andy Hewitt. Andy grew up in San Diego. He rode crew at UC Berkeley. He spent 28 years as an infantry officer in the Marine Corps. Hoorah! He participated in 7 wars throughout the Middle East and Central Asia. He also did an 8-year assignment with the U.S. State Department and spent time with working in renewable energy, defense contracting, and spent 10 years as a low-grade Hollywood actor. Sounds pretty good. He's also been married for 31 years to a, quote, super lawyer, which is that must be challenging to win any argument at home, and has 2 grown sons. Beyond that, he's competed in 27 marathons, 3 Ironmans. He swam the English Channel, the Catalina Channel, and he swam around Manhattan. So no, no big deal there, right? But more importantly and relevant for this show, he's raced in 23 swim run events, including 5 Atala World Championships. And he formed California Swim Run with Sean Durkin in 2015 and hosted the first ever U.S. swim run race on September 20th in 2015. Finally, and you know, for us, most importantly, Andy is our first patron on Patreon. So mini spoiler alert that if you support us on Patreon, you might get on the show. So with that, thanks for being on the show, Andy.
Excellent. Great to be here.
The first question, and we ask this of all of our guests, with you, it kind of takes a little bit of a different meaning just because you really are sort of the godfather of swim run in the U.S. But can you sort of paint the picture for us of what you were up to when you first heard about swim run and how you went from finding out about it to signing up for your first race and competing in it?
Well, I was just blown away when I first heard about it. And that in itself is a story. I'm sitting on a plane heading back to Grand Rapids, Michigan for the U.S. Mass Masters National Rowing Championship. And I get a text. The text from this guy, Matt Sargent in Minneapolis, who I used to row with. And all the text said was, "Dude, you're crazy. Check this out." And I clicked on the link, and it was just 2 minutes of something I've been looking for my entire life. This was the video from the 2013 race. In Sweden. And at that time, I think there were like 3 swim run races on earth, and they were all in Sweden. And I look at this thing, and people with hand paddles and flippers and swimming in their shoes, running in their wetsuits, carrying inflatable rafts with them. I mean, these are people, they were doing this race and they were stopping and hanging out and talking with people. And all this was in this 2-minute video. I watch it 3 times and the plane takes off. Now I'm sitting on a plane for 5 hours having to think about this thing. So on the plane, I sent out a text and just to 50 crazy other people that I knew saying, "I'm doing this. Who's in?" And that text sent when I landed, and only 2 people said, "Yeah, I'm in too."
That sounds about right.
One was Sean Durkin and the other one was James.
So I just want to unpack that answer a little bit. So because we get that a lot where people just think that we're crazy. It's like, oh, this is a crazy endurance adventure, perfect for Chipper and Chris. So at that point, had you already swam these large bodies of water, done a bunch of marathons and stuff, or were you kind of sort of ramping up to your crazy endurance activities?
No, I had done a lot of stuff. I'm old. So, I mean, I did my first world championship at 52. And I mean, I think I wasn't the oldest person in the race, but last year, I was the oldest person in 3 swim run races that I did. I was at the time when I got that thing, I was still on active duty in the Marine Corps, and I was unknowingly just about to head back to Iraq for a third time. And all of a sudden, this sport's around. And I'm thinking, where has this thing been hiding? It's been around for 10 years, and I didn't know about it. But the very first thing I did when I got back to San Diego after rowing in this a rowing championship. I just got an old pair of shoes. I got some hand paddles. I didn't even have a wetsuit on. And at the boathouse, I just ran about a kilometer, jumped in the water, and swam back to the boathouse, thinking I would just do that once. And it was so cool. So I did another lap. Well, 10 laps later, and other people at the boathouse looking at me like, okay, we knew you were crazy. Now this is like certifiable. And I was like, I can't believe this. Because when I first got in the water, I'm thinking, I'm in my shoes. What am I going to do with my shoes? No, it was awesome. But trying to tell people about it, as you know, they just look at you like, this is absolutely nuts.
You get a lot of sideways glances. And that's a similar experience that we have when we are up at Aquatic Park. And I know you're at the South End Rowing Club sometimes, but we'll do pretty much that same loop, but we'll just run. Yeah, it's about a mile. And then we'll do a swim and get out. And about the third time, the same people are looking at us like with these really probably very similar looks to what you were getting there. So we would love to hear the story about how you and Sean formed California Swim Run. So you went off to do Otolo World Championship and you came back and you thought people in the States will eat this up, or, hey, we have a couple of crazy friends that we want to try to get to throw one of these in San Diego. How did that first California Swim Run event come to be?
Well, so about a year before it happened, in 2014, I get back from that rowing event. I start training. Sean Durkin at the time was living in Colorado. Damon Anastas, who was the other person who said, yes, I'll do this crazy thing with you, he was living in Portland, Oregon. So I was pretty much on my own. I talked to this one guy who had been on the U.S. national rowing team to come out and just practice with me, just so I'd have another person there. I applied to the World Championship because at the time it really was the only race. It was a race in Utah, a World Series race, which wasn't even called a World Series race at the time, and because it was the only World Series race. And I applied, and they said, well, thank you very much, but you know, we're looking for like real serious people. And I thought, well, I thought I was serious. And so we begged and begged, and they said, well, you can come to the race in May in Utah. So we did. We trained. We went to that race. Unfortunately, we did the sprint race the day before we did the World Series race because we had never done a swim run race. So we thought, well, let's figure it out on 15K, and then maybe we won't completely embarrass ourselves at 40K the next day, the very next day. Also, maybe we shouldn't have had three rounds of Manhattan on that Saturday night before that race. But that being said, we had a great time. We had those Manhattans, of course, with Jesper Andresen, who was one of the original four in that original drunken bet for the Otolo swim run race. So anyways, we get done with that race on Sunday and we've totally caught the bug. And we're thinking, yeah, we can export this to the United States. Everybody will go for this. But we really wanted to do the World Championship. And the World Championship was full. A year beforehand, they were begging people to go to it. Now it was full. So every week, I'm sending notes and calling Mats and Michael. And finally, they said, hey, listen, a lot of people sign up for this thing. A lot of people qualify into this thing. But by the time August shows up, there's a lot of people who have realized they were completely out in front of their skis on this. And sure enough, about the 15th of August, he calls up and says, hey, you're in. And we're like, great, because we had already bought our plane tickets. Nice. And so we went off to that thing. Got home from that thing, and 20 days later, we hosted a race. We couldn't contain ourselves. We couldn't wait any longer. We just hosted a race and talked every friend we had into coming out and doing this. And we got 9 teams.
So from doing Uto in the fall, I mean in the spring, and then doing the World Championship in the fall, I mean, what was that journey like? Obviously, you're trying to iterate and figure out how you're supposed to do this as efficiently and as quickly as possible, but was it just like halfway through the race you're like, hey Sean, we should probably try it this way because it might work better? Or was it that much iteration, or was it, it's like, all right, let's just get through this and then we'll problem solve it afterwards for the next event?
We did see a lot of people going by us who had tether cords, and we're like, huh, that seems like that would have been helpful. And we saw a lot of people with swim buoys. That would have been helpful. We saw people who were not wearing a backpack. We thought that would have been really helpful. So, yeah, we kind of figured those bugs out. And then for the World Championship, yes, we definitely had a tether. We definitely had swim buoys and the right hand pedals and the right shoes and the right wetsuit. And we didn't have a backpack.
Yeah, the backpack is not super, super efficient in the water. Well, Chris and I, our first race together, first swim run ever was in 2018, your California swim run event. And that got us.
Oh, my.
That got us hooked for sure. And we had no idea. And we were kind of, we had just, our kids were just barely under a year. Both of our kids were under a year. And we went down there and we were kind of just falling out of triathlon. And we said, not sure how long this will take us or whatever, but it seemed pretty cool. And it was such a cool experience. Why the Borgata, what are those races? Borgata races happening. And they're like, I've never had a race that started at 3:45 in the afternoon ever. And it was just the coolest experience and totally got us hooked. And the fact that every swim exit and entrance, there was some volunteer that just, for the love of the sport, was there, and it kind of immediately got us into the community. And from, you know, what we've heard from the monks, our friends, the Swim Run Monks, John and Philip, you have quite the community that you've built down there in San Diego. I'd like to hear a little bit more about how that kind of got kicked off.
You know, that you mentioned that 2018 race that we held in conjunction with the San Diego Crew Classic Rowing Regatta. So here's 35,000 people who are at this event for rowing. They've never heard of swim run at all. They get done with all their racing. There's probably 1,000 people in the beer tent who've just been rowing for the past 2 days. Every age from like 15, not in the beer tent, all the way up to people in their 80s. Well, we designed that course so that the start and the first swim would be right in front of that beer tent because we wanted to get the maximum exposure. And I stood there when that race started. So while you were out jumping in the water, I'm sitting there next to the beer tent as all these swim runners run by the beer garden and jump in the water. And you should have heard what they were saying. They were like, whoa, no way. Check that out. Those guys are swimming. They've got their shoes on. And it was hilarious. And then they see them all coming back and they're yelling and cheering. You probably didn't even hear that when you went by, but that was a neat experience. But, you know, one of the biggest things, like you mentioned, that was your first race at the swim run race at Catalina a few weeks ago. Sean and I heard from probably 30 people at that their first experience, their first touch with swim run was one of our California swim run races. You know, just these local organic races, and just that like warmed our heart just to hear that, you know, they came to Catalina because they had started at one of those races on Mission Bay.
Yeah, I mean, I mean that's definitely our story. You know, in 2018, I was signed up to do Casco Bay the first year that it was happening because I'd read about swim run in this coffee table book called The World's Toughest Endurance Challenges, and I was injured that year, so I couldn't do it. So in 2018, when I asked Chipper and he said yes, we had already signed up by the time your race was happening, and we were like, probably makes a good idea to just fly down to San Diego, flew down for the day. Like, just kind of like, we already had some of the gear from just being kind of gearheads. And yeah, I mean, it was such a positive experience that I think it totally got us hooked. But, you know, I think what I'm really interested in hearing from you is why, like, what was, so you do the World Championship, you have this great experience, you want to export this to the US. But why was that? Like, what was it about the sport? I mean, this is going to turn into a love fest because we feel the same way as you do. But what was it about the sport that you were like, you know what, this is such a brush of fresh air for the triathlon scene, for the, you know, open water swimming scene? Like, what was it about it that really kind of got you all fired up about it?
Back to that point about I'm old. I was around here in when when triathlon started. And, you know, we see these crazy nuts running around Fiesta Island in, not even legal, public today. They were just in these little Speedos coming running out of the water, a bike. It was not a good look, no matter. And we thought we could do that. I mean, the first race that we did that was a little bit more legitimate than just the one where we had nine teams. We had this swim run race, you know, loops around the bay and everything. And we had Tracy Sundland show up for it. And Tracy Sundland, he used to work for Competitor Magazine. He's sort of the founder of the Rock and Roll Marathon. And he came and watched this thing from beginning to end. And he volunteered and he put the medals on people's necks. And he wanted to see everything about this because he said this was the same kind of feeling that they had when they did the first rock and roll marathon and some of the first triathlons. And so he's out there. Rick LeBeau was out there. I mean, Rick was there at the first triathlon on Fiesta Island in San Diego. And he's watching it, and all he's thinking is, you know, how are you ever going to monetize this? How are you going to scale this and monetize it? And then when the team started coming in and they were saying, this is the funnest thing I've ever done. And these are people who had done tons of other kinds of races. And Tracy looked at me and just said, don't change a thing. This is perfect. You're never going to make a dime, but this is perfect.
Do you think that's part of the, I mean, we think that the partner aspect is one of the really great features about this, where you get to do this endurance adventure and kind of share the highs and lows with a teammate. Do you think that that's part of the reason why so many people appear to be gravitating? Well, once they've done it, they seem to just stick with it.
I think that's one of the things that actually gets people to come do it, because they're not being asked to go and do something on their own. They don't really have to buy anything to start off, and they've got this buddy, and you get to talk the whole time except in the water, but that's okay. You swim a little faster, then you get out and you pick a conversation right at the word you left off on, and it makes the day go by so quickly, you know. And that's also, you know, one of the things you see. I mean, the fastest growing part of the sport is the mixed category. And I had a wonderful experience this past year. My partner, Caroline Wolick, we did four races together. We won two of them in the mixed category. We took third in at Casco Bay. And we had an outstanding time with this. And that's something you don't really get in a lot of sports. I mean, you look at Olympic sports, I think there's only six Olympic sports that between winter and summer that have a mixed category. And that's, I think that's really attractive to a lot of people. Here's finally a sport where a man or woman can go out and they're perfectly even at this thing. Even if, you know, Caroline was less than half my age. But it worked great.
So I wanted to ask you a question. So when you started California Swim Run, you know, there's these five rules of swim run. How did you come up with those? I mean, I think they're great. Was it just, you know, like were you talking to some Swedes during the Atala and they were like, oh, yeah, these are things that are really important? Or were you just like, hey, these should be the rules, so I'm just going to make them the rules?
Just in that summer of 2015 when we were training together, I mean, every day we had perfect weather that whole summer. And we're just, you know, every day we're doing 2 to 3 hours of just running and swimming with literally just shorts on and our running shoes. We never trained with the paddles or the buoy or anything. Goggles, you know, but most of the time no cap. And we came up with these rules, and it's really Sean who really sort of solidified the rules. He wanted to put something on the back of a shirt that said, you know, that said what we're doing and something about it. He wanted it to be funny. You know, one of the things Michael and Mats always said at the race briefings, a lot about safety, do this, do that. But the real essentials were just, you know, just stay with your partner. Be kind to other teams. Be kind to other people. And that was the big thing. So that first one, you know, tell everyone about swim run. That, you know, that of course comes from Fight Club. You know, it's sort of the opposite of the Fight Club. But you know, but greet everyone you meet, because we would be downtown running through the city and then jumping in the bay. You got a smile on your face, say hello to everybody. You got a buddy. You can't be embarrassed when you got a buddy with you, right? So, you know, we got into a little bit of like the five rules of swim run almost didn't make it one time. We were in Scotland doing this race, and it was the night before the race. And so we're just checking out the course. And the race in Scotland literally started at 7 in the morning in the dark on the shores of Loch Ness. And it starts with an in-water 2,000-meter swim. And the water temperature was 47 degrees. Well, that was great for Sean and me because we didn't care about the cold. But the day before, we went and checked out the place. So it's Sean, my wife, and me. And we're just looking at this thing, and these two other guys kind of are standing there next to us, and we look at them up and down. They look at us up and down, and obvious, we're both there for the same thing. So we look at them, and we're like, you here for the swim run race? They're like, yeah, you bet your ass. We're like, and they're like, where are you from? We're like, California. And we're like, where are you from? And they're like, just down the fucking road. And we're like, oh, okay. You know, and then they see Sean's sweat, they see the shirt that Sean is wearing, and they're reading through it and they start laughing, and we're like, what's that all about? And they're like, that item you have there, what's dog in, dog out? And we're like, you know, it's like the way a dog enters the water. The dog doesn't stop at the water's edge and adjust their goggles and adjust their gear and zip up their wetsuit. No, that's all done. The dog just runs into the water and starts swimming. When the dog comes out, it runs out 100 feet up, it shakes. But in and out, you save so much time. The world championship, if you dog in and dog out, you probably save, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes over the other teams. And so we're looking at them, and they said, oh, okay. We're like, no, come on. What does dog in mean here? And they're like, oh, no, we can't tell you. Your wife is standing there. Like, oh, now you definitely have to tell us. So I don't know how appropriate this is for the show, but they said, okay, well, so dog in Scotland means two boys are in a car having sex, and a third one's outside watching. Well, at that point, my wife is on the ground laughing her head off because we've been wearing these shirts all over Scotland and people kind of snicker and laugh. So we're thinking, well, they're just joking with us. So an hour later, we show up to the race briefing and everyone sees our shirts and they are just like, you can't wear that in public. It's a thing. It's a thing there. We couldn't believe it. We talked to old people, young people, men, women. They all are like, oh, yeah, that's not good here. So anyways, we definitely kept it in.
That's a great story and good context to have whenever I wear that sweatshirt to Scotland someday. So to change gears a little bit. So your first California Swim Run event in 2015 had 9 teams. And then when we did it in 2018, I felt like 25, 30, 40 teams maybe, to then you emailing and, according to Michael and Mats, very forcibly suggesting bringing Otolo over to California. Tell me what, in your mind, like what made you want to take that leap of bringing Swim Run, especially the Otolo brand, to California and the course that you designed or helped design in Kettle.
Well, that kind of snuck up on us. We so that was 2018, and Michael Lamel and Dominic Liu, both part of the Otolo group, they came and actually did that race in 2018. But in 2017, when we were at the race, the World Series race in Rheinsberg, Germany, the Thousand Lakes race, we had a discussion with Michael and Mats and Dominic about doing something in the United States. Sean and I probably started talking in about 2016 about doing something at Catalina Island. An urban race is great, it's convenient, it's fun, but the permits for an urban race like in San Diego, it is unbearable, almost to the point where it's just a triathlon. But at Catalina, we knew that we would have a permit where it would be all our own, especially up in the West End. But, you know, originally we thought, hey, we'll have a race. It'll go from Two Harbors to Avalon on Catalina. So we've been talking about that. So I think Mats and Michael had heard that we had wanted to do something like that. So we just had a conversation. And through that conversation, after the race in Germany, we just set down the idea of, well, let's look at it, maybe setting up a race. So that's 2017. Literally 2.5 years later is when it finally happened. We almost pulled the trigger on it in 2019. Good thing we didn't. We were all out there in 2019 on March 1st, and it had been 3 weeks of just solid rain. It was muddy roads. The whole place was closed off. And that is actually what drove us to designing that course that was completely in the West End, in the Two Harbors area, because they had closed the road to Avalon. And so the course that you raced on at Catalina this year was originally our alternate course. It was the course that would have happened if there had been, you know, rain incident or a weather incident. Well, then we went and practiced the course about 8 times and loved it much more than the original course. And from supportability standpoint and everything, and just from an athlete experience, it was a much better course than what we had originally thought of.
So, I mean, so I find that super interesting. So professionally, I work with races and race directors to optimize and sell out their races, and I was just continually struck by the effort that you and Sean and the local teams put in and that Atala was doing to make sure this first year race was amazing. And it was, you know, my experience, first year races, there's a high possibility of it being a shit show, especially for a race as complicated as yeah. Atala. So can you just speak a little bit of like what were those conversations like between you guys and Michael and Mats, and how were you sort of iterating to make sure that course was as amazing as it ended up being?
Well, I think you hit it right on the nose there. I mean, the first time, not only just the first time that it's in America, but the first time that they were bringing the Ertela brand outside of Europe. So there's a lot of risk there, a lot of risk to the brand, and to the sport itself. You know, if this thing goes jelly side down, like, people will do it the first time, but they won't come back the second time. So there's a lot of balancing there that we really had to pay attention to. I mean, luckily they've put on, I mean, Mats and Michael have been putting on races for years, so they know all that, all the mechanic side of that. In terms of what makes a good product for the racers, for the spectators, for getting people back the next year. But then now the whole thing's in the United States. It's one thing to do another race in Europe, but to do it in you know, in California, and to do the United States, that's a whole nother thing. You know, the costs were going to be a lot higher. The coordination. Also, it's out on an island. I don't live on that island. Luckily, Natalie Foote does live on that island. And she was, if it hadn't been for Natalie, this race wouldn't have happened. And the way she worked so well with Sean and me and with the Ertele organization was just amazing.
Yeah, I've heard nothing about good things about how she, what she did for the race and to make it happen, and to hear that it's pretty much all her fault, if you want to frame it that way, for such a nice course. Yeah, she did. Bravo, I say. So obviously getting an article in the New York Times a couple times and having such a, you know, a bang up job on race day, it was your one time to shine and they hit a home run with it, really brought a lot of attention to swim run in the United States. And that's kind of what we're about too, is helping grow the sport in the United States or bring more awareness and visibility to it. What other things would you say, as you gave birth to swim run in the U.S. and you've seen it grow from, you know, infancy to, I don't know where you would say now, toddler or teenage years, but what will get swim run in the U.S. to be, you know, kind of getting towards the triathlon household feeling, sort of?
That's a really good point, is in terms of how do you grow this sport in the United States while at the same time trying to get awareness for a new sport? I mean, that's one of the big things, is how do you get someone to do something new? It's one thing if you wanted to bring triathlon to some obscure part of the country that didn't have triathlon. Well, people know what it is, even if they don't do it. But swim run, not only have they never seen it, they've never done it before. They don't know anybody who's ever done it. And that's what you need to do. So I think small grassroots throughout the United States are a great way to make this grow. And that's one of the big things I'm going to be working on this year, as we promote the Catalina race for 2021, is I'm going to go to a lot of these small races and small events. I'm going to talk to all the people who did the Catalina race, who live in places where there is no swim run. Ask them what they think would bring swim run to their community, to their geographic community, as well as their athlete community. Because I think that's what's going to grow it. You know, one of the things when Michael asked at the Catalina race was, you know, how many people have ever done swim run before? And both on Saturday and on Sunday, it was like 75-80% raised their hand that they had never done a swim run race before. Well, that's huge. You know, you go to a race in Europe and it's 80% have done a couple of races. So that's the big, you know, balance that we have to tip there. And I think the way that's going to be done is by hosting races in different places. And, you know, most of the races we held in San Diego, none of them made money. And that wasn't really the goal. The goal was really to sort of just to spread the word. They didn't cost much money either. That's a nice thing. You know, you're not blocking off roads and setting up a bunch of porta potties and having barriers all over the place and cops at every intersection, you know, for a bike or something like that. So it doesn't take much to set one of these up. It takes a lot to set up a race on Catalina for people to come from all over the world. But to set up a small race with some people, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be listed as a race. Vivo Barefoot hosts a couple events during the year, and those are invite only. Well, you know, everyone likes to go to an invite only event. So if small local groups just had an invite only race, well, it's a whole lot easier to get a permit for that. You know, in most cases you don't need a permit because it's just it's just 20 people who are going out to do an activity together. So things like that, I think, will grow the sport the most here, you know. And then you look at, you know, thing like what Herbert Krabel is doing in North Carolina, and what Lars Fedinger is doing with Odyssey. Those kinds of races, bringing in the locals is a big item.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. I feel like we on the show, we're always encouraging people to find their local swim run race and volunteer. If you don't have a partner, guaranteed you'll have a partner the next year. But supporting the local events is really the only way to grow the sport in the U.S. I think having Atala come here and have that be a huge success. I had, you know, the first year it's already became the biggest swim run event ever in the U.S., which makes sense, I guess. But yeah, I think the future is really bright, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on. I mean, I would hate the sport to kind of turn into triathlon. I know we kind of shit on triathlon a lot just because it's so rote, and the experience. If it's an Ironman thing, they're trying to make that as fast and as flat as possible, and they're kind of taking away sort of the difficulty. And I think it's interesting, and Lars does this really well, I think, where you still want to make it accessible, but you don't want to make it easy. And how do we grow a sport like that where all you kind of see is like, oh, we just want to get the weekend warriors who don't have to train a lot and can just do it. Anyway, I'd just love to hear your thoughts on how do we grow the sport in the right way that gives people that keeps the soul intact for as long as possible.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. It took a lot of kicking and screaming to get the Hoteleur organization to having a solo event in the race weekend. I mean, that there's a lot of heartache with that. Most people, when they see swim run and they come to it really quickly, they understand the behind having a two-person team out there traveling through nature. That's great. Some other people, they're still kind of stuck in that triathlon mentality. And that is going to take them to, you know, needing to have a solo event. Most people who do solo, from my experience, the next year or the next race they do, they don't do it solo. Because they see all these teams just running by them with a tether and talking and having a good time and sharing the whole experience with each other. And that's very different. The team concept, you know, the people come to that really quick. But in order to get these races, I think that team concept is what's really going to sell it, in the U.S. There's a swim cap that, Swimrun Germany has, and on the side of it, it says, you can always go back to triathlon when you get old. And, you know, that's where we know that we're going to have to do a little bit more convincing with some of these people who are coming over from triathlon, when the first thing they ask, well, tell me about the age groups. How do the age groups break out? And when we tell them there is no age group, this is it. It's just you and a partner. Everybody's equal here. And they're like, oh, well, that's why I got into triathlon, was because of age groups. And of course, triathlon didn't start out with age groups. Nothing starts out with age groups. And then all of a sudden they had age groups, because that would bring people in. I don't ever see age groups coming into swim run. I think people like us are very protective of swim run and protective of holding back those items that have turned us and turned other people off from triathlon. That head down mentality. I'm only interested in my age group. I'm only interested in doing this weekend warrior thing. and getting this gigantic medal. You know, I mean, that was one of the nice things about the Catalina race. I mean, it was the lightest medal I think I've ever seen in a race in the last 10 years. Just a nice handmade wood. I mean, you know, it was, they make it right outside of Transylvania in Romania there. And, you know, the folks out there, it's this group called Seeds of Kenosis. And it's all made out of like this old wood. So,
well, Andy, we could talk to you for probably 3 or 4 hours, and we definitely need to have a beer with you at some point. But we do want to be respectful of your time. Where can people find out about things that you're passionate about or areas that you hang out on the internet, if that's a thing that you do? And it sounds like look for Andy at all your local, potentially local swim run races. He could be there. Do you wear a disguise, or how should they look for you?
Hey, if there's people who are listening and you want to go do a swim run race someplace, send me an email. Just, you know, andy@californiaswimrun.com. I mean, that's the easiest way. And we will send you a note back. And you want some help with it? That's what we're here for. I mean, that's why we started California Swim Run, was to really get people into swim run. So if someone wants to host a race or something like that, like we're working with a guy in Mexico right now. We're talking with people in a couple of other locations that hopefully we'll be able to announce soon. But you know, the biggest part is just host an event. Just have an event. Some people think hosting an event is really hard. It can be so simple. And, you know, let us help out with that.
That's really great, Andy. I'll just throw in, you can email Andy or go to californiaswimrun.com. And I just want to say personally from Chipper and I, we just really are grateful for you embracing us and supporting us as we start this podcast, and your enthusiasm for what we're trying to do and grow the sport in the U.S. and try to do it in this like very inclusive, diverse, accessible way. It just means a lot to us to have your support. So from Chipper and I, we just wanted to say thank you from the bottom of our heart for you being super stoked for what we're trying to do.
That's great. I mean, you know, a platform like the Low Tide Boys, this is sort of the extra secret sauce that's going to make this sport work, you know, because people can hear from me and, you know, they know me as this crazy old guy, you know, but when they hear it from other people who've done races, that's what really makes a big difference.
Well, with that, you know, again, just thank you so much. And next time you're in the Bay Area, we'll have a beer or three together, and hopefully do a little swim run practice. Be a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I mean, the best way to do it is to just go in and out of Aquatic Park and on up over to Land's End and up the Central Trail and then back, and then come out of that water on that last swim and run right straight up to Buena Vista.
Yeah.
And have them line up.
Yep.
The
Irish coffees.
Line up the Irish coffees.
I love it.
And I mean, who's going to kick you out? You got hand paddles on, you got, you know, you went, no one's going to kick you out.
I love it. Yeah. Well, on that note, Andy, thank you so much for being on the show with us, and yeah, we'll see you out there.
All right. Really appreciate talking to you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave a review on iTunes if you're so inclined.
You can also sign up for our newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at The Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, drop us an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Writing Easy Records for our show music, and of course our wives for their support and tolerance of our swim run activities, hobbies, and other bullshit we do.
Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
And then a run.
And then another swim.
then another run,
and then another swim,
and then run to the finish line and just keep going until you're done.
Yes, or
until
run to
cross the finish line,
or run to the car,
or run to your car
somewhere. Just keep running. Peace.